introduce Alain. He's actually from the lovely city of Gouda, and he works in Eindhoven. But it's not about his work that he does at the university that his talk is going on, but actually about his cool project about the Metercast, where he actually built a Kubernetes cluster. And they're welcome, everyone. There are a lot of people interested in the Metercast, Alain. So I'm actually asking everyone to give Alain a really huge applause and let the talk start.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you. So you're at the Kubernetes talk. If you're in the wrong talk, you can still move. Let's start. Who am I? I was introduced, but I still introduce myself a bit. I'm an HPC consultant in the supercomputing center. Louder. Nog dichter. Zo goed. Ja? Can you hear? You cannot see the screen probably, but yeah, they're becoming very small letters in the end. I'm a consultant at the Supercomputing Center in Eindhoven at the university. I've been doing hacker camping since the 2000s. I'm dead old. I do Linux since 1993. I'm dead old. And I do ice skating since 1974, so I'm dead old. And every now and then I drink a little whiskey. So why do you want to do Kubernetes from scratch? Why do you want to do everything yourself? I wanted to do exam, the Kubernetes Certified Administrator. That was the only exam that was then, about 5 years ago, available. And I did a small Udemy course by Mousamad Mamabet, and he said, if you really want to learn Kubernetes, you have to make it yourself. Don't do any install scripts or anything, just make it yourself. And there's also the Kubernetes the hard way from Kelsey Hightower. He has a nice introduction of how you do the building of a Kubernetes cluster. So I used that also. So I had nothing, so I had to start with hardware. I didn't build the hardware, I'm not that crazy. And I found on Marktplaats a very cheap, small Dell machine with, 4 cores, 16 gigabytes of memory, an SSD, some HD, and a network of 1 gigabit. That was in the end a problem, but I'll talk about that. After I thought, well, I'm trying to learn Kubernetes. Maybe can I get some money from my boss to buy the hardware, and because a course also costs money. I said, oh, no, there's no problem here, you have 3. So I could use those. In the end, I had 8, because they everywhere popped up on Marktplaats and cheap sites. Yeah. So I had the hardware, I had to place it in the data center. So this is my data center. You can see all the machines here, and here are the fuses. So it's in my fusions cupboard. And you also see that it's difficult to see, but some lights are out, because if you have, you get every time a mail from the energy supplier that your base daily use is very high during the whole day and night. Then and then the prices went up, so I put turned some off. You also see the indication numbers, the HEMA plug stickers. They are for the floor manager of the data center. That's my wife. And I say, yeah, please reboot number 3. And then she presses number 3, wait 30 seconds, and then she press. In the beginning, there were no lights, so no numbers. So then I said, the third from top, I think. That doesn't work. Yeah. No. So on that hardware, you have to install an OS. So I could choose for Ubuntu or whatever, but I choose Alpine. Does everybody know Alpine? I think a lot of people will know it because the Docker containers in the old days always contained an Alpine, because it's very small. If you install it, it's only 5 megabytes, but you have nothing. And you have the Ansible agent, that is SSHD, so at least you can SSH into it. But if you do, for example, Ansible, there's no Python, there's no sudo, there's nothing. So I thought that's good, because if I build something and it isn't there, then I learn what it needs. So I tried that. Well, the first thing what I found out, that to keep it clean, small, it uses not glibc. but it uses Musl, another library. So I thought, oh, there's no problem. If I want to install some software, there's probably static binaries. So you can download from some software, for example, in the old days, Grafana, you could download a static binary. But it was still linked to lib64, LDN Linux. And then if you send an email, yeah, it's static linked, but they're still linked to an old, yeah, we don't mind. Yeah, so I do, but okay. So I made it myself very hard because not all packages are also there. So if you sometimes need to install something, the package was not there. So next, I had an OS. I thought I need virtual machines. So I had to build virtual machines on top of the OS. So I had to install a hypervisor. Yes. Why? Because then I thought it would be handy that I can do live migrations and to other nodes. I come to that later, that it's not needed. But a lot of things here are not needed. Eh? Just, it is to hurt yourself. It is just, yeah. And then, for example, I had the first nodes running, and I SSH'd into it, because the SSH daemon is there, and it took very long. Now, normally, if it takes long, what's the problem? DNS, yes. So, I thought it was DNS, but that was not. I was running my own DNS. That was okay. So I found out that the randomizer in the virtual machine had not enough random, because Alpine is so small, nothing is happening. There's nothing happening. This is very. The machine is idling. There is no randomness. So you have a trick to add the randomness of the node under the virtual machine, and if you have more virtual machines running, and then the randomness is good enough, and then I could SSH within a second inside the node. It was not DNS, but I come to that later. So on those VMs, I installed, of course, another OS, because in a VM you need to install an OS. Yeah, I choose Alpine again. So then I thought, now I had to run Kubernetes, but before I could run Kubernetes, I must be sure that I can run containers. Yeah, so I had to install some container engine on that OS. Container engine. This is my sidetrack, and then which I always get very excited about. If people say, this is how it is. You used to have a hypervisor, you replaced that by Docker, and now you can run containers. And so everybody says you need Docker to run containers. I think it's great marketing, because it's not true. You don't need Docker to run containers. You need a Linux kernel. The Linux kernel runs the containers, not Docker. Docker just orchestrates the containers. And even if you take out Docker, the containers keep running, because they're not connected like that. And that is already since kernel 2.6.2.4 possible. So that was when the Docker containers came to life, when that was possible. Of course, you have the Sun jails and the, anything that was already there, but C groups. You know C groups. It's that's the concept that makes the kernel do the containers. But it's also to differentiate processes. So SA Linux uses it. And the first thing most administrators always turned off was SA Linux. And now the containers came. Everybody turned C groups on, but cause I need containers. So, containers are not virtual machines. No. It's a picture of what it then is. Because then I thought, I only need container D to run, but you need more. You have this Cryo. That's the container runtime interface and engine. And then you have a monitor, and in the end there is a process called CRUN, and that starts the container. why is this Simon in between? It takes the output of the container and puts it in a file or into the screen. And if the container API cryo dies, everything still keeps running until on the common dies. But then you see a lot of layers just to run a container. And I have already had the OS. So, but then I started a container. It's very fast. It's like, it's in a few millisecond. It starts the container. And because I started with container D, and I switched to cryo, so there's also... No, I think it's common is also running on the container D. Because it's a different interface. I used run C, and later I switched to C run, and it was also again a problem because nobody uses that, and then you find out that things not by default not work correctly, so you have to make configuration changes, which is not documented anywhere. But I found out to get it running, and also the Docker command of course doesn't work. If you want to check if container is running, you must the cryo tools of the CRI tools use to get commands or get information. So I now had a container environment built on hardware with virtual machines, and now time for Kubernetes. This is talking about layers. This is the Kubernetes, and what I found most funny. This is a control node, and this is also a control node. Here's the Kube API. Oh, sorry. The Kube API is running. And in the whole documentation of Kubernetes, they didn't say that you also need to run the kubelet on the controller plane. So I didn't install it in the beginning. And then you start running containers that needs to be everywhere, and then they can't run on the control plane because there is no kubelet to start them. So I found that out. Then I thought, I want to do HA, so I do two nodes. And then in front, I put a load balancer. But I created a new spoof, of course, because now if the load balancer dies, you cannot do anything anymore. And I talked to the Kubernetes nodes with kubectl. Kubernetes also needs a way to store its state. So it uses etcd. And etcd does normally. If you normally install Kubernetes, it comes with it and it runs. That's why. But I decided I'd create three VMs with all etcd, and then I have an etcd cluster. So next to a VMware cluster of a Kubernetes cluster, I now have also an etcd cluster. And where's kubeproxy? That's also a nice thing, because that's also what in this I had a lot of issues to get it started and running, and then I found out you don't need it. So in the documentation says you need it, or this is how the things that should be there. But if you install a network interface, then it takes over the work of kubeproxy, and you don't need kubeproxy anymore. But it took a lot of time. So this was all set up. What I would think. I had the etcd. I had nodes. I had the thing. So I went to the HA proxy node. I did apt install of apk install HA proxy on the etcd nodes. I did install etcd on the control plane. I installed the Kubernetes API, the scheduler, the manager, the kubelet. That found out. And on the node itself, only the kubelet. And also cryo I needed to install, and it also installed the common and the other stuff. So then I started the first kubelet, and it already stopped because I had swap, and then I found out you cannot have swap. It's until version 1.28. So then it became beta. In 1.22 it became alpha. But I think it's still beta. I looked up this morning, and they say in 3.1.3.2 it's beta. Yes, sir.
Do we know why it doesn't like swap?
Performance, and I don't see. It needs to know how big the memory is. So if you have swap, it doesn't know I think. I don't know. And now it's there. So it's yeah. Then I did some tests on how many pots can I start on one note. So I tried and I loop skip here and I had like 70 and then it stopped. No more pots, no more containers. But a pot is a container in this case. And then I found out that Alpine only sets a U limit of open files to 1024 to avoid fork bombs and that kind of stuff. So they had to set that U limit. Then I found out that the kubelet wants to, and the containers wants to write something on the file system. And yeah, that's also default, not allowed by Alpine. Yeah, as a root you can make things, but other processors cannot write on a slash. So then I was almost there, because there was also something about sets. Every Kubernetes objects talks via sets. So I need to do the sets thing. And that was again a lot of uitzoeken, how do you say it? Finding out how it works. I had to make my own CA because that was the easiest way. And then I had to I put it here. I put in the cert lifetime of 2 years. So you can guess what happened after 2 years. Everything stopped and I didn't know why. And then in the end I was in the logs and if somewhere said certificate expired. Ah, help. That's a problem. So, but luckily I had scripted everything. So now I regenerated all the certificates and I used the 10,000. So now I'm very curious when it will fail. So that's also a tip, script everything if you do it like this. So then I had to start, for example, the kubelet, but also the kube API server. And the kube API server, it needs a configuration file filled in with a lot of values. I had no configuration file. And on the internet, there are not many configuration files that worked at all. So yeah, I started up and it says, this is missing, I changed that, and this is missing, I changed that, this is missing, change the desk. So, and I did it only for the API server, but also for the scheduler and for the, I had to do this. Took a long time. And I think I finally found out that it's V is 2, that is version 2. That was my last question last time, why is this V2, but this is a version 2 config. So there is a version 1 and there may be a version 3 one day and then nothing works anymore, I don't know. And then there is this number. It's for the range from 3000, that zijn de port ranges that the Kubernetes containers get when they are exposed to on the node. Why is that number? I didn't know, but I worked at a company one day and then we had containers running on port 40,000 and higher. And Linux, if it does an SSH session, it takes an inferior port to finish the session. It chooses one. So sometimes it was 40,000, then the containers wouldn't start. And so that's why you also hear in this range, it's exactly the half of the... often exactly below the range of those ports that Linux uses. Learn something. There. So, well, I had everything, started everything up. The configs were okay, so now it started running. And I run the command kubectl get nodes. And there were the nodes. All seven. I don't see any master nodes. Now they're called controller nodes. And it said not ready. Not ready, but I did everything I could. So, yeah, there were some things missing. For example, I thought, well, making it something a controller node will be very difficult. I don't know. I thought, oh, the config will be great for big. But the config, it's just these two lines. Say, you label them control plane. And you say no schedule, so no containers will be scheduled there. That was the whole trick. If I run that command, now I have two control nodes. You see, yeah? And then I found out you also need a DNS inside. So and a network, because if Kubernetes runs and you have more nodes, the containers on the different nodes cannot reach each other. So you need to install, and that's not default installed by Kubernetes. You have to download or decide on a container network interface. So I started with, what did I start with? It's a long time ago. Kube Router. I just heard that the project is now end of life, but okay. And when I started that, and I requested again, are you ready? And yes, I was ready. Everything was running. But then I found out the CNI, it runs in containers. But still, if you want to use, for example, NFS, the node does the NFS. It are not where the containers run. It's not the containers that do NFS. So you have, and that was Alpine, so I had to configure everything I needed to run stuff for the CNI, for example. I need to install on the node. So, and then you also have to install DNS, but it's also not very clear how to do that. So we need kube DNS. In the end, it was easy, and I also did a DNS horizontal autoscaler. So because if you hear people talking about very big installations of 5,000 pods, it's always a DNS problem in the end, because every pod talks to DNS, talking about two other pods, and it's a big mess, so you have to scale the DNS. On every node you need to run a DNS, then you have to install probably caches if you want to do it fast. This is echt crazy. So I have DNS, and let's test DNS. So I said, well, let's run a container and do a ping or whatever, but I couldn't even get into the container. I couldn't get in. I could not reach it. So then I found out that there is roles in Kubernetes. You have to assign the administrator that is allowed to connect to the pods and start pods and so on. So you have to make some RBAC rules. So those rules are fairly good explained. So I downloaded another YAML and tweaked it a bit, and then I had that. And then you found out that it's a cluster role and a cluster binding. So you have to, I'm not going to talk about that. But in the end, I was able to do an NS lookup Kubernetes, and then I got the server where you talk to the API. So the cluster is running, and then we have a running. Now I need to connect to it. I want to run some services, and then I want to connect to that cluster. How do I do that? The services are running from node ports. I talked about these node ports. So you can install the node ports and then of the containers, and then you use the node ports and an external load balancer that connects to those node ports. But I didn't want to do that. I want to do that internally. So there you have an internal load balancer. And if you also want to do web services and so on, you also need an ingress controller, so that if you talk to one IP and it will distribute the services. So I installed a proxy ingress. That was also a choice which nobody else does, but everybody installs Nginx proxy as ingress controller. So I had also a lot of setup issues in the beginning, but that was okay. And I used kubevip to do the virtual IP of a load balancer thingy. So in the end, I had a Kubernetes ingress controller running with a type load balancer, a cluster IP, and an external IP which is reachable, and it listened on some ports. So I could connect to 443, and then I could route the data. And that was all. That number was all provided by that Q-Fib metal LB I used as in the beginning as an ingress as a load balancer. So that I switched, just to switch. So then the ingress controller. I want to run my website inside this container. What do I do? How do I do that? Then where's some YAML. Again, some YAML. YAML. So I put the ingress plus the ingress YAML, and I put in a cluster certificate YAML to get it all running. So then you also need to have run a certificate manager just to get it going. I had already a lot of pods running. And still, I had no website or any servers there. So and then I found out I want to run my website and I need to run it on different. It will run on different pods, so it needs some storage to get the HTML somewhere. So I need to, install a container storage interface. So I started playing with that, and then I found out about the persistent volume and the persistent volume claim. And then after a few years, I wanted to change something. I found out that a PVC is namespaced. I think that is also changing. But yeah, it's all they all talking. Yeah, it's so easy. You can move everything around, but within the namespace, this is not always very handy. And as I already earlier said, the nodes are doing the magic. Eh? It's not the It's not the containers or the pods or Kubernetes. They are doing the storage. So I started with NFS and I added CephFS. Yeah, CephFS, that is also a cluster solution. So I had to build a Ceph cluster. So I built another from scratch on Alpine a Ceph cluster, just to know how it works. And well, this is the setup. It worked. Three Ceph nodes. The nodes have the storage. So that was okay. Then again, you had to do all the certificates because all the nodes talk together. Not real certificates, but keys. So we had to all set it up. And if you do a normal install, it's just click and it works. But if you do it from ground up, you have to find out how that works. And I tried that. A lot of experimenting, and then I finally got it running. And I would say I never lost data. I had crashes and power surges and everything, but all my data was still recoverable. And in the end, I had Ceph running, and I thought, well, maybe I should also some monitoring. So I installed some monitoring in the cluster, in the Kubernetes cluster. In the end, I had graphs from Prometheus in Ceph. And it all worked. Still had no website, but this looked a bit like a website, but okay. more containers. Ceph used the KVM images. To host the KVM images is very slow. I had the node itself had SSDs, but if I run the images of the VMs inside Ceph, it became very slow. And of course, I had in the beginning I had HDDs, and I changed them to SSDs. But the dot didn't improve because the network was the bottleneck, not the storage. The network was always this a 1 gigabit network is not for Ceph. I found out. And also, if you reboot an old node, which is an old hardware, and the battery is broken, then not always the time is correct. And then also Ceph and Kubernetes and nothing works. So NTP, you also need to make sure that you have NTP running to get everything in sync. So then I had everything running and I installed my stuff. It's going okay. And then I thought, now I need to upgrade. How do I do that? So I start with, I have a control plane which is high available. So I do first the one node, I shut it down, start it up, and then I do the next one. That worked perfectly. It came up, it worked. So then I have you have special commands for in Kubernetes to say, okay, this node needs to go down. Please remove all the stuff which is now on there to other ones. So I run that command, knowing that it's not so very fast to move stuff around and because of the network again. But yeah, so then you have to type that command, wait a time, find out which if it all went okay, and then do the next one. So it was a lot of work. So and then in the end you have to say, okay, this node is ready, now others can move, because the next step was to do the next node, and then all the containers moved again to the other side. So I thought, well, but Kubernetes, isn't that already high available by itself? So why not just reboot the node? Let's see what happens. Well, upgrade it and reboot. Don't remove the containers. And it worked perfectly. It took 20 seconds to reboot and 2 milliseconds to start all the containers. And I was ready. It worked. I call it YOLO ops. You only live once. It's it worked. And it kept my uptime now for this weekend, so 4 years and 300 days. Still running. Yeah. But yeah, there's a trick, because everything is an etcd. If you set it, you shut it down for 3 weeks, then you turn it on, it says, 3 weeks running. Very happily. Nothing happened, but 3 weeks have passed. So the power things and so also included there. I know it's YOLO ops, but I call it YOLO ops, but some people call it chaos engineering, and they have a whole company about around it. And but yeah, just do it. I just reboot nodes and everything and keep working. But there are some things which doesn't work. For example, if you reboot the node, then the container is always restarted, because it's down of the pod is restarted, and it tries to download the newest version of or if you say latest, it tries to download the newest version of the image before starting it. And I only set latest to kube router, and then it was upgraded from version 1 to version 2. And then my whole network died because the configuration for version 1 didn't work in version 2. So I had to find out what was wrong, and you have to be a bit fast for that. And the same is for PostgreSQL databases, I would say. That sometimes the database couldn't handle off on, so to say. Although it was redundant, but if you don't know, if it's failed because one of the two databases dies and you don't notice, then you're running on one, and then it was. But also, I did not lose any data there, luckily. I also found out that Kubernetes has a very long timeout before it knows that the node is down. Takes about 5 minutes if you don't tweak that value. Just after 5 minutes, it'll say, "Hey, there's something wrong. Let's fix this." So yeah, this you also have to take that into account. But in the end, I was doing very fast reboots, and after 5 minutes, I was ready. And I saw what's happening. One node didn't come up, and the Kubernetes took 5 minutes to find out that it didn't come up. And always watch out for API version changes. They're not always set by YAML. External DNS, for example, uses hard-coded configuration with those API versions. So then the API version changed, but the configuration can't handle that. So I installed everything by hand. I didn't use kubeadm because it didn't. I installed the kubeadm. It didn't exist on Alpine. So I also was not. I didn't use Helm. Yeah, I tried it, and then I said that is not a good idea. I don't use it. Sucks. Yeah, that's this way. Using all those YAMLs and no Helm, that helped me really understand how everything in that Kubernetes cluster works. And I'm still learning, but because every time there is an update of this, an update of that, something else changes. Very weird. So now I have a Kubernetes cluster with 83 pods running for a website with one visitor a day. That's me checking if that website is still there. And it is all in the Metacast, 400 watts or something like that. But I, of course, I added some other stuff, like some R stack to watch movies, and I even installed my DHCP server inside Kubernetes. And then the numbers on the servers come up, because then my wife can press internet doesn't work, press number one, fix that. And now I'm using Argos today, which is GitOps. It's also possible. And I installed a lot, and now I'm also finding out that if you put your Kubernetes full with containers, your Kubernetes cluster, and one node fails, not all containers can start up anymore because it is full. You see, you have to have some spare. You always have to have spare. A server or node or room to. You cannot fully fill it. So that was it. Any questions?
Hello, thanks for the talk. Closer, now better. Thanks for the talk again. On your last slide, you mentioned you run a DHCP server in Kubernetes.
Yes.
Can you lose one or two words to this? How do you manage this?
Because it is just a DHCP process inside the container. And because net admin writes, you can listen on port, what is it, 69? And then you give an answer on port 68. So that works. And because the DHCP server talks to the node does everything. And then the DHCP clients can connect. And if it moves, it can still connect. Because a DHCP server doesn't need an IP address. It needs it's a broadcast protocol. So
I will try this out at home.
Yeah, and I also have KA DHCP, which can make, you can have more processes, and with a database under it, and then you can you even, yeah, I tried that also. But if you start playing, yeah, it's magic. It works. I was also very surprised. That's a good question.
So you mentioned you are doing HPC at work.
Yeah.
Are you using Kubernetes for that?
No.
Oh. Are you planning to use Kubernetes for that?
Yeah, we have an enterprise NVIDIA system that does all kind of magic, but below it's Kubernetes. So, but we don't manage that, and I think for hosting LLMs and that kind of stuff, we'll maybe start doing that, because HPC is just needed for that.
Where goes persistence storage?
Sorry?
Where goes persistent storage?
Yeah, in SF.
In SF, okay. Acknowledge.
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah. So you're still using SF for PVCs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a Ceph CNI plug. It's like 20 containers, but okay. And then you say, I want a PVC, and it automatically creates a PV.
Badly at 1 gig?
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's a hobby project. The performance is zero. So,
okay.
But if you're a website for one time a day,
have
it's okay.
Have you considered Longhorn?
No, I didn't use Longhorn because iSCSI was not available in Alpine in the beginning. You know, because the node needs to do it, so then you need to have iSCSI on the node to run Longhorn, for example. It's now different, I think, but in the beginning that was not there. So there are a lot of choices I made just because I only didn't know any other products, but also because it was not there on Alpine. Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Oh, over here. Okay.
In all those years running, have you kept that with Kubernetes version? And if so, how did you manage to do updates with without breaking everything, yeah, basically?
Every time I upgrade it, I break something. But then I find out what's wrong, and then I fix that. But because I always upgrade very very fast, like small increments. Yeah? Update fast and often. That works. And also reading the documentation of the releases. It says the Ceph. In the beginning, Ceph was inside Kubernetes, the CNI. It was already it's out, and we have to do a CNI. You have to use a real CNI. Okay, then. Does this answer your question?
Is the hypervisor still in, or did you remove the hypervisors?
No, the hypervisors are still there, but now we're using Proxmox. Because the KMU was met by hand was a lot of work.
Okay.
Also.
Would you do it again with hypervisors?
Yes. I would do this all the same again because I learned so much. Like the random stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
And also in VMs, it's easy to have a clean machine. You just make an image with a clean machine, you install it, and then you run it, and then you install stuff. Oh, I installed this and this and not this, and now it works. What did I do? Oh, I clean it completely, and then I do install the stuff, and then see if it works. Yeah?
Do you know Cluster API?
Cluster API. Yeah, I heard of that. Yeah.
It's a system for provisioning Kubernetes clusters.
Yeah.
And you can hang it to a bare metal machine. You can put it to Proxmox or VMware, whatever. And it all manages your clusters from one place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Also does that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you also use Talos, I tried. Yeah, that's you can do an upgrade via the command line, and it works also. But then I know exactly what's happening because I know what it is. So I look at the Talos and oh, they're doing this, or they're just restarting the nodes, and they just yeah.
You also find out if it breaks.
Yeah, and why it breaks. Yeah, that's so I learned so much. I would do it again. So to learn, huh? If I say I just want to play with Kubernetes, then install K3S or something like that, and play with Kubernetes, but I wanted to know why and what. And also a lot of logs I read to see what went wrong. Because the developers were not very clear in what they, even with spelling mistakes in there, what they're doing. No, I think I did on the documentation side. I think I fixed something. There's a kernel instead of kernel or something like that. But no, I think I did maybe. But it's a good question because we have to give something back for all this. Yeah, and also like the people from Alpine, they were bringing out new versions of the Kubernetes, and then they contacted me. Is it working? I said, yeah, it works. Okay, then we keep it this way. Okay, no more questions? Thank you.